We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today.
Darkcast Network, the light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
99% of missing people in America are found, but then there's the 1%. Some of the unfound get extensive news coverage, community support, or even an episode of Disappeared. Others, however, get forgotten, their cases barely investigated before being put on a shelf to collect dust. Even though Danielle Bell was only 14 years old when she went missing in 2001, she falls into the latter category. Danielle came from a troubled home in Gatonman, Florida. She looked older than she was, and that led people to treat her like she was older than she was. Even though she was just a child, Danielle soon found herself in some very adult situations. When she went missing on September 28, 2001, no one outside of family and close friends looked for her. Everyone gave up on Danielle, but not her sister. Now, over 20 years after her disappearance, Bonnie Bell continues to fight for her little sister and for change. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Danielle Bell. I'm Kona Gallagher, and this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for joining us once again. It is currently spring break as I'm recording this, and Ethan's parents have our children. So because of this, we're actually going to enjoy our freedom and leave the house. So this week's episode will be different. It's going to just be me. Well, not exactly, because we are also featuring our first interview. I came across Bonnie Bell, Danielle's sister, on TikTok, and I was instantly mesmerized. Like, she's my age, and I was just drawn to her dark sense of humor and passion for calling out injustices. I had initially planned to research and write this episode and then follow up with her for clarifications and questions, but as I got into it, I realized that there was just so little out there about Danielle. Not only that, but what is out there is woefully incomplete and in many cases, just wrong. There are so many news articles, for instance, that have the wrong date that she went missing. So I thought that this would be the perfect time to finally get over my fear of remote recording and give Bonnie the platform to tell her and her sister's story. So let us know what you think about this. If the format is something you enjoy, let me know and I'll try to work them in more. But before we get started, we have a new member over on Patreon, so thank you so much to Emily P. We really appreciate your support. But now, let's get to the story of Danielle Bell and my interview with her sister, Bonnie. Danielle Ariane Bell was born on July 28, 1987, to Susan Bell. She was the youngest of three children and grew up in Gatonman, Florida, which is near Pensacola. Danielle was a happy kid who started cheerleading as a small child. She continued to do this all the way up to 2001 when she entered Tate High School and joined their cheer squad. Danielle was generally a happy kid. She got good grades and made friends easily. But as she entered middle school, her grades began to slip and she started running around with a rough crowd. Bonnie, who was 4 years older than her sister, was around to see the beginnings of this. But by the time things were starting to get really out of hand, she had left home and was attending college. Danielle's parents had also recently divorced, and even though this man is Bonnie's stepfather, her biological father was never in the picture, so this is who raised her as well. Danielle's parents had a tumultuous relationship, and they had separated previously, but by the time Danielle entered high school, they had split for good. And understandably, she was having a hard time with it. Basically, in September of 2001, Danielle Bell was in a vulnerable position.
So Danielle was the youngest of three. She was, you know, definitely the baby of the family. And she was pretty outgoing, had lots of friends. Growing up in the household was rough on all of us. There was a lot of day-to-day neglect for my mother, for sure. Danielle and my mother were close, very close, especially, you know, when my parents split, my sister went and lived with my mom. My brother went and lived with my stepdad. So she was very bonded with my mom, right? Like, she was solely responsible for my sister, and that's a scary thought.
The fact that Danielle was running a little wild by this point didn't come as much of a surprise to Bonnie. Although, like I mentioned, she was older and off to college by this point, she was still local and could see what was going on. And she also told me that their home life had long been marked by neglect, and their mother put them in some inappropriate situations.
When you say your mom was neglectful, drugs obviously enter the story at some point. I mean, at what point, I guess, because, you know, it's hard to gather from what's out there publicly right now if the drug issue was something that was kind of recent or if that's something that had been throughout your childhood
so
as well.
So that's a good question. Now that I look back through the past, she for sure was, into drugs, heavy into drugs. I did drugs with her. Yeah, when I was a teenager.
Oh.
You know, smoking pot. She was smoking pot with me when I was like 15.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I tried hard drugs a couple of times with her when I was about 19. And then after that age, really was like, I'm not touching this crazy shit anymore. So I didn't really mess with it after that. But I knew that she was actively using at least, marijuana and cocaine.
In 2001, as Danielle was entering her freshman year of high school, she began dating. And I put that word in quotation marks because I am absolutely not legitimizing or condoning this. A 24-year-old man named Alfredo Gomez Sanchez Jr. Now, it may shock you to hear that this guy was not exactly a winner. His court record in Escambia County, which is where Catonement is, dates back to 1994 when he was charged but acquitted of brawling, fighting, corrupt public moral indecency. The next year, in 1995, he was found guilty for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon without intent to kill. This charge sounds like it stems from a DUI. He was sentenced to 2 years of probation in order to perform community service and complete either DUI school or a drug rehab program. There was a criminal mischief charge that was dismissed in 1996, as well as charges for aggravated battery and robbery without a weapon that were also dismissed. By 1999, he was also taken to court for not paying child support. All of this happened prior to Sanchez meeting Danielle. I asked Bonnie how she found out about Sanchez and this relationship.
So 2 weeks before my sister went missing, I scheduled photos to be taken on the beach of me and my brother and sister. Mm-hmm. And I went and picked my sister up earlier during the day. We're wearing the white shirts and jeans, typical beach pictures. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And of so course. 2001, oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And so I took her to go get a white shirt, mm-hmm. and we just hung out. We hung out at my house, got in the pool for the day. We got ready together. We went, got my brother, then went to the beach, got the pictures taken, dropped him back off. And as we're pulling out of the neighborhood for me to take her home, she says, "Will you stop at a, this is, back in the day, we used to have a payphone, so I can call my friends so they can come get me." Mm-hmm. And I said, "No, I'm taking you back where I got you from."
Bonnie now believes that the friend Danielle called was Alfredo Sanchez. She didn't realize this at the time because at that point she had never heard the name Alfredo Sanchez. It wasn't until after her sister's disappearance that she connected this phone call and a disturbing evening at her grandmother's house where her mother and Danielle were living with Sanchez. This evening that Bonnie's about to talk about also marks the last time she would ever see her little sister.
This is when it really blew up for me, when it started to get nasty with me and my mom. So this is 2 weeks before my sister went missing. It was like a Sunday night. We get there and my mom had a boyfriend at the time he was living there. His name is John Bass.
Okay.
I don't think he's been questioned enough either. But anyways, that's another story. I'm hanging out. I'm going to eat dinner, right? I'm like a Burke College student. I need to eat dinner there. So I was eating.
For sure.
And next thing I know, these three older guys walk in with my sister. Like, she met them outside and they're coming in. And there's like this whole conversation about her going to hang out with these guys that are in their mid-20s with my mom. Well, it just so happens that it's one of them is Alfredo Sanchez, his cousin and his brother. Basically, I get into an argument with my mom and my sister. So I asked my mom, I'm like, who are these guys? Like, they're older than I am. And I was mouthy then. So my mom's like, she babysits their kid or one of their kids. I was like, it's like 9 o'clock on a Sunday. What the fuck? And she's 14.
And she's 14.
So my sister, of course, is like, Bonnie, you need to shut up. You need to chill.
Now, the part about babysitting is important because if you recall, Alfredo Sanchez Jr. had been taken to court in 1999 for not paying child support. According to Bonnie, she believes that the child that Danielle was allegedly babysitting was his. What we're not sure about is if the whole babysitting thing was ever real. It may have started as a cover for Danielle to be permitted to spend time at this much older man's house. But by the time of this argument that Bonnie just spoke about, Danielle was openly dating Alfredo Sanchez. And it's one thing for a 14-year-old to start seeing someone inappropriate, but it's quite another to do so with your mother's full knowledge and seemingly her blessing. And that's where this story diverges from a lot of other ones that we've covered and why Bonnie has started talking about her sister's story on TikTok. She believes that her mother knew a lot more about what happened to Danielle than she ever let on. And what's more, she doesn't believe that her mother was completely honest about the circumstances around her youngest daughter's disappearance. The general story that has been reported over the years is that Danielle was grounded, but on Friday, September 28th, 2001, she snuck out, went to a party, and never returned. But what none of the reporters ever ask is this. If Danielle was grounded, why did it take 2 days for her mother to report her missing? According to Bonnie, it's because the whole grounding story is complete nonsense.
I read something that said she was grounded. Is that true? Because that doesn't seem
like, you know, I think that was my mother's attempt after she went missing to show that she had some type of control over the situation. I don't believe she was actually grounded. No. She also claimed that her and my sister got into a fight before my mom left and went to my brother's football game that evening. But my uncle swears up and down, he does not recall seeing her at that football game.
On the night of September 28th, Danielle started out with some high school friends. They attended a party at a park about 3 miles from her home. It was a typical high school party. There was music, drinking, maybe a little bit more. The park also happened to be in Alfredo Sanchez's neighborhood, and his younger brother Alex was in attendance. According to witnesses, Danielle didn't leave with the friends she came with. Instead, she was seen getting into a white Lincoln Continental with Alex Sanchez. They went to a second party at the home of a man named Robert Bassett. This is another interesting item from the reporting on this case. Danielle attending this house party is one of the known facts that pops up in news articles. But in everything that I've read, Bassett is just treated as a man who happened to throw a party that this young girl ended up at. But according to Bonnie, this wasn't a random party at all.
Let's talk about who this guy is. Now, is this somebody who you think Danielle knew before this
year? Oh, yeah, because he was best friends with Alfredo Sanchez. They weren't buddies.
So this isn't a situation where, like, Danielle was with Alex and who she knew, and they just went to like some guy's house for a party, you know, which also happens in high school. I mean, you know, just because you go to a party at somebody's house doesn't mean that you've ever met them or, you know, know them in any way, right?
Can I tell you 100% for sure that they knew each other beforehand? No, but I'm 99.9% sure because he was such a picture in Alfredo's life anyways, and the whole crew hung out together all the time.
Yeah. And by the whole crew, I mean, you mean him, the Alfredo, like the brother, yeah, the cousin.
Alfredo, Robert Bassett, his best friend, his brother, Alex Sanchez, and his cousin, Roel.
So, okay. So they go to this party at Robert Bassett's house. It's not, so Danielle's around not safe people. She's around people she knows, though. And then basically she's not seen after that. So what happened at that party and what happened after that party, what it comes down to is she never made it home that night.
Right. Correct. No one has seen her since that night.
Here's the timeline as we know it. Friday night, Danielle attends a party in a park. She leaves that park with Alex Sanchez and attends a second party at Robert Bassett's house. She does not make it home after that. According to Susan, even though Danielle was allegedly grounded, she had given her permission to stay the night at a friend's house. Now, keep in mind, this was in the days before everyone had cell phones, so it wasn't like your parents could just shoot you a text to check in on you. It was very common for you to not talk to your parents until you came home the next day from a sleepover. But when Danielle didn't arrive home by Saturday afternoon, she called one of her friends to check in on her. This friend knew Danielle wasn't with her, but basically wanted to cover for her friend, so she told Susan that Danielle was there, but she was busy and would call her later. The friend, of course, didn't suspect that anything was wrong. She just thought she was doing her friend a favor and not getting her in trouble with her mother. Even though Danielle never called her back, Susan apparently didn't panic. She also didn't panic when Danielle failed to come home on Sunday. It wasn't until Sunday evening that Danielle's grandmother convinced Susan to call the police and report Danielle missing. When police arrived, it went about as well as you would expect.
What did they, what was their reaction, I guess? Like, how seriously did they take it? What did they originally say to her?
Listed her as a runaway.
Right.
Right.
That old
and
classic.
And she hadn't taken anything with her. There was nothing. She didn't take any clothes. She didn't take anything. Just what she left with what she had on.
Susan didn't tell Bonnie that night that she'd reported Danielle missing. The next morning on Monday, Bonnie called her mother for an unrelated reason and says that when she answered the phone, Sarah was hysterical. She could barely understand what she was saying, but eventually figured out that Danielle was missing. Bonnie immediately drove over to start searching. The Escambia County Sheriff's, the department who had this brand new case, didn't assist in the search. Instead, it was a group of about 15 of Danielle's friends and family.
First, I went and searched the river area, Muskogee River, which is in north Escambia County. That area, that's where kids went to go party, skip school, all of the things.
Okay.
And then we started getting... My grandmother was getting phone calls from that friend of yours, or hers that I was mentioning, about where we should look. So we were looking everywhere. We were going to her friends' houses and knocking on doors, hotspot hangouts that the kids in that area were hanging out at, like at parks, the river, like I said.
Yeah.
So we, and then we were, you know, just canvassing with flyers by the end of that day.
I guess, so day one, I mean, what were you thinking? Like, what did you think the most likely scenario was at that point?
At first, before I found out the story about these guys, at first, mm-hmm. I certainly was confused. My hope was that she was either skipping school Monday, I don't know, hanging out with a friend, passed out drunk somewhere, I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
Before I knew anything, but because it had been almost 3 days at that point, I was worried. I was 1,000% worried on that day. And then it got progressively worse.
Yeah. She had been classified as a runaway, but I'm assuming you quickly figured out that she hadn't taken anything with her, or anything like that. So I'm assuming, right, that you had kind of brushed aside that possibility pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't think she had ran away.
Yeah.
I didn't have any reason to believe that she had ran away. I thought maybe she was just out being stupid, doing something she shouldn't be doing, right? Like,
right.
At first. Right.
Because, like, if she was trying to get away from your mother or the house or whatever, I mean, did you have the kind of relationship where she would have called you?
That's the other thing. She hadn't called me. She hadn't called my uncle,
right.
So she would have called me or my mom's younger brother.
Okay, so she was close with your uncle?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about her father? She wouldn't have called him, you don't think?
No. Not if she was in trouble. Not if she was drunk or high or something like that and needed a ride or was in a situation that she shouldn't have been in, she would have called me or him.
Your mom's general story at this point is, you know, she thought she was off with friends. She realized after a conversation with your grandmother, realized that something is perhaps amiss. Calls the cops. You all freak out. Obviously, you start searching. At what point do you start learning about these parties and her actual whereabouts on Friday? Like, how long does it take for that to start coming out?
Monday afternoon. And then, so I spent like the first part of the morning with a family friend searching the river. So I was getting very little information. And then later that afternoon, mid-morning, I was with my stepdad and his girlfriend at the time searching, still getting very little information. Well, we all go back to my uncle's house. That because was kind of where basically set up command. That's when things start coming out. My mom starts telling the story of Alfredo and how my sister said she was thought that she was pregnant and that Alfredo had given her drugs and had sex with her and all this stuff.
That's right. According to Susan, Danielle thought she was pregnant. In media interviews Susan gave in the years following Danielle's disappearance, she claims that not only did her daughter tell her this weeks prior to her disappearance, but Danielle also said that if Alfredo found out, that he would kill her. While Susan did apparently make a doctor's appointment for Danielle, it was scheduled for after Danielle ended up going missing. Apparently, Danielle never took a pregnancy test either, so we don't actually know if she was pregnant. But despite her 14-year-old daughter admitting to having a sexual relationship with a 24-year-old man, and that she feared for her safety if he found out about this possible pregnancy, Susan seemingly continued to let Danielle see him.
At that point, my stepdad and myself are like, what the fuck? What are you talking about? Like, what do you mean this has been going on?
Right. Because at that point, you knew Alfredo existed and you knew that your mom was letting her hang out with him, but you weren't aware of like how, like, of the true nature of that relationship, right?
Right. And I still hadn't connected. It was that later that afternoon, and I still hadn't even connected. Oh, that guy I saw 2 weeks ago is Alfredo Sanchez. Yeah. And Alfredo Sanchez was sleeping with my son. That all hadn't connected. So that's when I would, Jesus. It was like in the evening time that she starts, and then we're like, what? Like, we're like, what are you talking about? So, then that's when, you know, we had started people had started saying something about the party, and kids were starting to talk to the police had gone out and started to, you know, start questioning people. And that's when we found out, like by Tuesday morning-ish, Monday night, we were starting to get word of the parties.
Okay, so even though the police immediately classified her as a runaway, they did start an investigation. Okay, so they were questioning the friend. So now, who was the first person who was able to talk to Alfredo? Was it one of you, or was it the police, or who spoke to him first?
We tried to find him. We couldn't find him.
Yeah.
No one could find him for 3 or 4.
After a few weeks, police were able to track down Alfredo and his cousin Roel. Roel said that he had no idea what had happened to Danielle, but that he was worried and had been out searching for her as well. Alfredo had a different story. Alfredo eventually was tracked down by police, or just he came back, or
he ended up coming back and the police, he talking to the police.
And then did he admit seeing Danielle that night?
Well, first he claimed he didn't even know who she was.
Alfredo did eventually admit to knowing Danielle, but stuck to a story that she was just the babysitter. While the other people involved, Robert Bassett, the cousin Roel, his brother Alex, did eventually admit to knowing who Danielle was, at least, their stories kept on evolving as well.
He simply just doesn't. None of them own up to seeing her that night, except for an occasional slip up. And when they were, you know, being investigated, Robert changed his story 8 times. He said at one point in time that she ended up leaving with another friend from that party, from his house. That friend claimed, says, okay, nope, yeah, we did not take her home. She was still there when we left. Secondly, there was a story that she had stayed the night at Robert's house. And when he woke up, the phone, she was gone, and the phone, which this is a landline phone with a long cord, was pulled all the way out the back door to his patio. And she was gone.
Well, so like as though somebody wanted to make a call in private, so they pulled the phone out to the patio, or
but that she was gone when he woke up.
Now, did he say that Alfredo had spent the night too? Or like who spent in this version of the story, who spent the night besides Danielle? Or was it just,
Danielle?
So there's this party with a lot of people, including her boyfriend, which I hate using that word in this situation. His brother, you know, other friends, but everybody left, but this 14-year-old allegedly spent the night and then was gone the next morning.
Correct.
It's an interesting story. Like, how does that make him look better than like,
know. It's none of it makes sense.
So at that point though, was he admitting that Alfredo and Alex and the rest of these people were there? I guess I'm just kind of trying to figure out when it became widely known that this party featured these people together. Oh,
for sure. Within the first 2 to 3 weeks. For sure. And then 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay. So before Alfredo even came back, they knew that he was at this party and was there that night. And did they get that from like just the other kids and stuff who were at the party? Because it sounds like it was a mix of high schoolers and adults, right? So, so it was like the other people at the party were like, oh, yeah, Alfredo was there. Mm-hmm. Alex was there. You know, person A, B, and C were there just giving their statements.
That's correct. There were so many eyewitness reports of them all being there. There were eyewitness reports of Danielle being totally intoxicated. There are eyewitness reports of Alfredo being there, Alex being there, and Robert being there, of course.
Do you know about, like, how big of a party was this? Like, how many people are we talking about?
I would say a good 30 people, 30 to 50. So a decent sized, party.
At the point where her friends left, the ones who Robert initially said had taken Danielle with them, do you know what they said in terms of like when they left, how many people were still there? Like, obviously, according to them, Danielle was still there. Had the party kind of died down by then? Did they leave early?
From my understanding, they left fairly early, like 11-ish.
Okay. So the party at 11 was probably still going pretty strong.
There was still a good amount of people there. The party was going pretty heavily until about 1:30.
It would stand to reason that most of the players in this were still there and still hanging out. And so now if they left at 11, some of the people who are saying that Danielle looked intoxicated, I mean, was she kind of bad off early on?
Yes.
Or was she drinking? Were there drugs? Like
alcohol.
What kind of?
For sure.
Okay.
There is a high likelihood that there could have been other drugs involved, but we know eyewitness reports pot and alcohol, like saw her partaking in that.
Okay. By this point, by this party, the friends she was hanging out with are already out of the picture. The ones at the park, they never came to the party.
There was one kid that I think ended up going up there to that party for a little while. And he also reported seeing her there and trying to get her to leave at that point in time, but she wouldn't. So he didn't stay long though.
Danielle didn't actually, to your knowledge, have any plans on staying at a friend's house that night, did she? Yeah. So like the initial plan likely was she was going out, she was going to a party, two parties, you know, whatever she was initially planning on doing. But then coming home
right
later.
That was right? my understanding.
A couple of weeks go by. You're starting to find all of this out. Robert Bassett's changing his story, saying Danielle was there. Like, what are the police thinking at this point?
The police kind of, once they talk to everybody, it kind of dies off into a dead end.
According to Bonnie, after police interviewed everyone who was willing to talk to them, the case basically hit a dead end, despite the fact that police no longer believed that Danielle was a runaway. Everyone suspected foul play, but still no official searches were performed. The Missing Children's Foundation Class Kids assisted and performed a search about a year later. Sadly, it turned up nothing. The case was assigned to several detectives with little change for years. Danielle's case continued to get passed from detective to detective. It wasn't until they were on their third or fourth, a man named Mark Schmeister, that Danielle was able to receive some form of justice.
New detective by the name of Mark Schmeister. Mark Schmeister was the best detective we could have ever asked for, and he's the one that got Alfredo in prison. I mean, that's why Alfredo's doing 40 something years.
Yeah. And I definitely want to talk about that, because that's like the bright spot in this whole thing is that this guy really got convicted of a lot of things and is going to be in prison for quite a while. So, okay. But before we get to that, like the initial investigation, and clearly the searches didn't turn up anything. So the case after that does go a little bit dormant for a while. How did he change things for you? And how did he change things?
Well, he started doing real detective work, real police work. I mean, he did his job. And so he really hammered in on what we knew to be true. And that was that there were at least a dozen eyewitness reports of Alfredo being intimately involved with my sister. There were, of the drugs. He also talked to people and found out that another young female had been a victim of Alfredo Sanchez's and pushed for charges of lewd and lascivious behavior for that young woman and my sister. And that's why Alfredo is now serving time in Florida prison.
So the other victim that happened after Danielle went missing?
You know, it was really shortly around the same time. Yes, it was after my sister.
And were they both 12 to 14? Like 15. It was Ludo and Savius 12 to 14. So it's after your sister. So he's even older at this point.
Right.
And still going after a 12 to 14-year-old girl.
Yep. What's really interesting about this case to me, when you read the case files, and these are interviews that have been done by the nonprofit Class Kids and the sheriff's department. I've read all of them.
Mm-hmm.
There are multiple young women outside of my sister and this young woman. There's multiple of them that have reported Alfredo or Robert Bassett taking them to a particular spot in the woods near the river and raping them. Or attempting to rape them. A couple of them got away.
Jesus. So was this one of the places that had been searched at any point?
Yep, okay. That's why we searched that area.
Though Schmeister was able to get Alfredo locked up for 40 years for lewd and lascivious acts with two children, he wasn't able to find enough evidence to charge him or anyone else in Danielle's disappearance. Robert Bassett remained free, though Bonnie remained certain of his involvement.
Why do I think that Robert Bassett had something to do with it? Because he sure likes to stay up in the mess of it. It was his house, the last place that she was seen. And I think that he would have done anything to keep his friend from getting in trouble. I mean, they were tight. They had been friends since middle school. I have friends that I've had since middle school. I would do just about anything for them to help, you know, keep them out of trouble within reason, of course. But, you know, I'm just saying that friendship runs deep.
Right. And I think that's really important to talk about, because you don't necessarily get that sense at all from anything that's really out there about her case, right? Like, you know, it's you've got Alfredo over here, you have Robert Bassett over here, you know, this is the boyfriend, this is where the party was, but like that there's not a whole lot of like a connection.
And they were very well connected.
Unlike Alfredo, Bassett's criminal record is more violent. He has spent years going in and out of prison on probation and is currently locked up on charges unrelated to Danielle's disappearance. Robert Bassett is bebopping around, causing a lot of trouble.
Yeah, he's funny. I mean, his rap sheet is so long. Like,
and a lot of it is domestic, and I think that that's important to bring up too. I mean, a lot of it is toward, you know, girlfriends. Yeah,
he's
and things
currently
like that.
Back in jail right now for felony battery and stalking.
Yeah,
he's got a violent history of like. I can't remember what. So the victim's advocate from the sheriff's department and the state attorney's office keep in contact with me, and like they call or email me and tell me what's going on. And so supposedly he had, outside of the DV charges recently, he also got into a car accident while he was for work. And I can't remember. He was a driver for like a transport for people that, like, either have disabilities or have to get to medical appointments, which is really scary to think of being responsible for people that are vulnerable. But he got into a car accident and, like, basically, like, was yelling and threatening the woman that he hit who had their kid in the car.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, scared her. Then he has some domestic violence charges and stalking charges. Anyway.
Wow. I mean, I could imagine how scary that was. Like, I've seen his picture and I would be pretty intimidated if he started yelling at me after a traffic accident.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. He's a scary dude. I mean, Robert, he makes my skin crawl. He's a little creepy.
The years continued to go by, and though police would tell them they were still working on Danielle's case, no new information was ever uncovered. Susan and Bonnie would still occasionally be interviewed by local reporters, typically around the anniversary of Danielle's disappearance. It was near one of these anniversaries, about 9 years after Danielle was last seen, that police performed their first and only official search. They dug up and searched Robert Bassett's septic tank. They found nothing. Bonnie continued to try to bring awareness to her sister's case, as well as those of other missing people. But her mother's behavior in the time surrounding Danielle's disappearance continued to bother her. Something wasn't right. And as her mother started deteriorating, everything began to come into focus for Bonnie.
So ever since my sister went missing, my mom she would clean up. She would be sober up. And I would be around her when she was sober, trying to have a relationship with her. She was at my house often when she was sober. And so I started noticing back in 2017 that she was strung out again. I basically cut ties with her. I was like, I'm only going to have a relationship with you if you are clean and sober. I'm not doing this shit with you. She basically, I would hear from her on and off throughout 2018, 2019, until one night in the summer of 2019, she showed up at my house in the middle of the night.
And just to clarify, like, you stayed in the area.
Yes,
at that point,
I was still
right?
in Florida.
Like, you were both.
Point.
Yeah.
I answer the door. She tells me she needs a place to stay. And I basically tell her she needed to be gone in the morning. I didn't want her there. Didn't want her to stay there. Yeah. So she ends up staying, leaves, and she's pissed off because, you know, I don't want her there. I'm like, no, I meant what I said. I don't know what your situation is, and I don't care. You've already caused enough damage. enough harm. I'm done putting up with your crap.
But I think a lot of people can identify that sure. too, who have dealt with similar situations, because suddenly now it's your fault for not helping her, not supporting sure. her, you know, and then, yeah. So she's trying to lay of the course. Guilt trip on you.
Of course. She leaves. I don't hear from her, but I start getting phone calls that she has basically either she tried to rip a couple of people off for money, like family friends, and they would call me and be like, hey, you need to get your mom under control. And I'm like, the fuck you want me to do with her? Right? Like, I don't have anything to do with her. I don't talk to her. You know, you yeah. need to not have anything to do with her also. Well, then I get a phone call that she, from someone that she was prostituting. And I was like, all right. And that she needed to go get tested because that they knew that she had been with someone that was HIV positive. So I called and I said, I heard that you were prostituting off of New Warrington Road on the west side of Pensacola, and that you had been with someone that you need to go get tested. She's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. Basically, you know, she didn't know what I was talking about. She hangs up on me. All right, cool. So I start getting more phone calls. Someone calls and tells me that she's at the Queen Mary on Davis Highway. I get another phone call that she had stolen a U-Haul truck or had not returned it, and that they needed this vehicle back. I go to the Queen Mary on Davis Highway and watch her strung out. First, I locate the U-Haul vehicle there, and I find her outside of the hotel returning from wherever, strung out. From there, I went to Brad Dennis of Class Kids, and I said, I know there are rumors in the case files about my mom prostituting and pimping my sister out early on in the case. I have this information. What do you want to do with it? So he goes to the hotel, takes a picture, and verifies with the hotel staff that she had been kicked out for turning tricks in this hotel. It was a seedy, shady motel that yeah. she had several people in and out, men, and was kicked out.
There had been rumors, though. So, because what this sounds like, obviously, is that she's very much in a downward spiral. But there had been previous rumors that she had been a sex worker before and had possibly gotten your sister
yes, correct.
Involved.
So when those rumors were in the first investigating case files from the detective, Mark Schmeister.
At what point did you find out about this?
I took a summer back in 2012-ish and read those case files because I wanted to know everything that was in it. I recalled those being there.
Did you confront her at the time?
Oh, in 2012? No. Because I was reading those case files strictly for self-knowledge. I had already questioned her several times about why did you wait so long to call the police? Why, you know, all of that.
Right.
Right.
All the normal questions. I mean, like, so I guess at that time in 2012, did you put any stock in that? Or did you at the time just think
it was always in the back of my mind? And I remember telling my ex one day, if those turned out to be true, I wouldn't know what to do with myself, basically, yeah. if that turned out to be true. So for me, piecing and actual having the tangible evidence and that those rumors, putting those two together, it just filled the whole fucking picture. It put in so many gaps or filled in so many gaps of all of the things that she had said and done previously that it just made perfect sense.
Bonnie is now convinced that her mother trafficked Danielle. She was not part of some large criminal organization. This wasn't planned. From what it sounds like, it just kind of happened. It started with Susan introducing drugs into the home, then introducing drugs to her daughters. Bonnie believes that Alfredo began to supply drugs to Susan and that at the very least, she let this grown man have sex with her child in order to keep the supply coming. she knew about Danielle and Alfredo and the fact that there was a sexual relationship between the two and allowed it to happen. But what you're saying is that it likely in your mind went beyond that, that it wasn't just her kind of throwing her hands up and going, oh, I can't stop this. She took maybe a more active role.
I think that I think that she took a more active role.
That, you know, when we were talking earlier about that, you said that, you know, you believe that he was supplying your mother mm-hmm. with drugs. The sex trafficking aspect of it, do you think that if you do believe that your mother was doing that to your sister, do you think that also involved Alfredo, or if that was kind of a separate issue involving just other people?
You know, that's a really good question that I'm inclined to maybe in the hopeful part of my brain think it was just Alfredo, but yeah. Anything's possible, right? Like it could have been other people. I mean, we hear stories all the time about women pimping their kids out for the different people. And I think that my mother had that temperament and drive given her addiction and her very evident history of neglect. I wouldn't be surprised.
Right. So what about though, from Danielle's standpoint? Because I mean, do you think she would have talked to you about anything like that going on, or would that just be something that she would not? Because, you know, she would know that you would obviously lose your mind.
I think she knew that I would have taken action on it and that I would have gotten my stepdad involved and I would have gotten the police involved and I would have caused holy hell.
So, I mean, to you, it's not unlikely that if something like that was going on, that Danielle wouldn't have told you because of that. Okay, so 2019, you start to put all these pieces together and you're really starting to think that your mom knew a lot more than she told you or told the police, because, you know, you look back on the old articles, the old interviews, and she's very much the typical grieving mother of, you know, a missing child, right? Like she's doing the interviews, she's talking about how much obviously she wants answers and she wants people responsible to be put in jail. But, you know, and even talking with Alfredo about Alfredo saying that, you know, she'd be willing to make a deal, you know, just to get answers in this case. So what answers do you think she had? I mean, at the time, like, how much more do you think she actually did know?
I think that she knew she was letting her daughter hang out with a 24-year-old man in exchange for her getting drugs and keeping her mouth shut. That in itself is trafficking your child. I think her choice of turning a blind eye at a bare minimum is in itself an admission of guilt, you know, in a lot of ways.
Well, and that's pretty much irrefutable because, I mean, she has said herself that Danielle told her, you know, that she thought she was pregnant. So, like, she knew there was this sexual relationship going on by her own admission. Like, so you're right. At the very, very bare minimum, she was allowing this to happen.
My mind goes to the training I've had and the statistics I know and the patterns that she has displayed over time. And when my mind goes there, anything's possible. I don't know the extent outside of what, you know, of what we know to be true of her involvement, but I truly wholeheartedly believe that she knew more than what she's ever said.
Yeah. So do you think that the things she held back harmed the
Absolutely.
Investigation?
Yeah. Yeah, I sure do. I think that had she been more upfront, you know, how do I not know that she didn't have a drug debt to them and something happened to my sister? Maybe she knows about that. I mean, I don't know. When you start messing with that kind of, you know, substance abuse and darkness, there's so many different things that can happen. And I just don't know what they were because they were never investigated. And therefore, my sister never got a fair chance to find justice because of her mother.
Back to 2019, when you find all this out, you're putting this together. Your mom is clearly mm-hmm. not in a good place. What happens after that? What happens after you, you know, send this information to class kids where does everything go from there?
I reported everything I knew to the sheriff's department and I left Florida. That's what I did.
Sometimes you got to protect yourself and your peace by putting physical space mm-hmm. between you.
Yeah. And then from my understanding, they never investigated it after that. I did follow up, I don't know, probably about 6 weeks after I left to see what, you know, mm-hmm. if they had brought her in to talk to her, and they said that they couldn't find her, even though I told them where she was immediately. And so from that point on, I mean, I haven't followed up. I had the victim's advocate reached out to me when Robert Bassett went back to jail for the 2020 charges. And it's kind of been dead since then.
This new understanding of her sister's case was, of course, difficult for Bonnie. How do you get over something like this? She gave the information to the authorities and moved to Colorado as a form of self-protection. She needed a fresh start, and the cool mountain air seemed like just the thing to help. Unfortunately, Susan wasn't able to have a fresh start or answer for her involvement in her daughter's disappearance. For anybody who may be wondering, well, what about now? Your mother be interviewed now?
No, my mother died in 2020, October of 2020, after she was squatting in an apartment and the cop showed up to remove her. She jumped out of the third story window and killed her, and she died on impact. Toxicology reports show her high, extreme amounts of meth. And my understanding is that she would have been living on the streets and prostituting the whole time.
Though she, of course, never forgot Danielle, Bonnie had to take a step back from the investigation. It had all just become too much, and she just felt like she was running into a brick wall. But then she joined TikTok, and that all changed. All right, so 2019, you find all this out. Your mother dies in October of 2020. You have moved mm-hmm. far away from the entire situation, and it sounds like you kind of took a step back from the investigation a little bit, and then kind of came back with a vengeance from what it seems. So like what spurred that? I mean, what spurred this phase that you're in now?
So yeah, I've always been involved some way, somehow with getting my sister's story out there. And yeah, I've taken long breaks after my mom died, I absolutely took a break. I've always been outspoken about, you know, missing persons and like missing persons cases. And I did need that break. The vengeance came back just by chance. Really. I did a video on TikTok that went viral and I kind of was like, okay, well, this is my platform. This is my niche. This is my message. This is something I'm passionate about anyway. So
right.
You know, even outside of my sister's case, just like sexual assault awareness and missing children's statistics and keeping pedophiles in their damn place, which is not around children. So, and that's kind of where I'm at today. I don't live on the hope of, you know, finding my sister. I think to be active in missing persons work, if you want to call it that, or human trafficking work, and being a family member, you have to compartmentalize that. And I'm not always good at it, but I try and I take the time when I need it. I'm also got a really big mouth. So I don't do what I do on social media now for just my sister. I do it for all missing persons cases. I mean, there's so, I'm flabbergasted at the amount of comments and information people have given me. Like, they think you have to wait 24 hours to file a missing persons report.
Oh,
or they
yes.
don't know what to do, because being in that initial state of mind when somebody first goes missing and you're a family member, you don't know what the fuck to do.
No, you're just panicking. It's yeah. You don't know which
I mean,
way up.
You know, we rely on the police to help us, and this misinformation out there. You know, my point is to just educate and get people to advocate for their missing person. I mean, that's really what it's about, is being able yeah. to advocate.
And this is where our paths converge, and why I thought it was so important to talk to Bonnie after I started watching her videos on TikTok. We try to cover a lot of lesser known missing persons cases on this podcast, and we spend a lot of time talking about the investigations and often where mistakes were made. It's important to remember that police officers usually receive no training on how to investigate missing persons cases, and it is so difficult for a victim's family to know what questions they should be asking or what they should be doing in those early days. Bonnie is now using her platform to help give people an inside look into a missing persons case with the hope that it may help the next family. I do think that your sister's story is so important in that, because it's a really, I don't want to say it's a good example, but like, I mean, it is of the way that a lot of these cases are treated and mishandled, right? And especially because you've talked about how, you know, you grew up the neighborhood where you yeah. lived was kind of a rough area, like you were, you know, of a lower socioeconomic status, and, you know, in an area where the sheriff's department is underfunded, and, you know, they're not following up in the proper way. And so these things that people think are basic that happen in every missing persons case don't. And, you know, like a search, like, you know, people who don't look at these cases over and over again think, well, of course there's a search. Like, it's a child. It's a 14-year-old. Like, they're of course knocking on doors. They're of course doing all this stuff. And in a lot of cases, it's not. Like, these things are not
right.
done.
I mean, totally. And we can see that a lot with, like, missing and murdered and Indigenous women and missing Black kids.
Absolutely.
You know, it's, you know, my sister is the typical blonde hair, blue eyed white girl, but from a low socioeconomic status, we didn't get
right
what I would consider to be adequate investigation and services, really, right? Like, this isn't something that we deal with every day. I hope not. Right? So, right. I mean, just, it's so important to know if you are the loved one or your loved one's a minority and they're missing, knowing how to advocate for yourself and not taking no, don't take no for an answer when it comes to filing a missing persons report. You know, go to the media,
yeah.
push, you know, advocate.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Sarah Turney is a really good example of that too. You know, she advocated for her sister, and she was told time and time again, like, nothing is going to happen unless, you know, this gets out and the pressure, the external pressure is put on, you know, on the police and the prosecutors to actually do something. And in these cases, it is true. The squeaky wheel absolutely gets the grease. So it's mm-hmm. so important to get the story out there as much as you can, because yeah, it can help your
sure.
case. It can help, but I mean, it gives so it just gives the knowledge to people to advocate for themselves if, you know, God forbid they ever find themselves in that situation. Because you're right, like, you don't know. And there are just so many misconceptions and preconceived notions that people have about cases like this, that unless you either go through it firsthand or, you know, just look at it every day of your life, like, that you don't know. And it's so important to, like you said, don't take no for an answer, and to keep on going, because they're not going to do it unless there's an external pressure, like the police, for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, size, whether it's apathy, whether it's, you know, they think it's the person's a runaway, like the full court press that we see in movies and TV, it doesn't happen unless the external pressure makes it happen.
Agreed.
So, I mean, I think what you're doing is super important. Again, not you're bringing awareness to your sister's case and possibly again, and awareness, it makes so much difference in these cases, because it's really easy for people to compartmentalize things. And so, especially in something that happened so long ago, I mean, we're talking over 20 years at this point, people who were there, who weren't necessarily involved, I mean, you know, but who might know things, who might have seen things. It's been 20 years. They've moved on with their life. They put it in a box and they probably don't think about it that often. And they don't necessarily have any reason to think about it that often. But if they're lying in bed one night at 3 a.m. scrolling through TikTok, and then they see Danielle Bell's name come up, I mean, that might
maybe
spur them to say something that they haven't said before, you know?
Absolutely.
You never know what could come of it. I mean, and honestly, what do you have to lose?
Right? I mean, I don't. That's just it. Nothing.
Yeah. I mean, sure, you're going to piss some people off, but I mean, are they really people that you want to make happy to begin with?
Nope. I do not.
Bonnie says that unless Danielle's body is found or someone confesses, the chances of her case moving forward at this point are slim. She's able to take some comfort in the fact that the people whom she believes are responsible for her sister's death are currently locked up, but that certainly doesn't mean she has closure. While that particular word remains elusive, Bonnie has found some sort of peace and purpose at this point in her life. And when it comes to Danielle Bell and what happened to her, this is what Bonnie wants you to remember.
The most important thing for me for people to know is that she was a child. She was 14.
Yeah.
She wasn't given a fair shot at life due to a neglectful household, a neglectful mother. And then the situation that she was dealt with was fucked up, and she deserves justice. And so, you know, I think if you do have information, it's important to report it and remember that she was a child, especially if you have children now.
Yeah.
You know? I hope that those people do think about that.
Danielle Bell has been missing from Catonement, Florida since September 28th, 2001. She is a white female with light brown hair and blue eyes. At the time of her disappearance, she was 5'4" and between 110 and 120 pounds. She was last seen wearing a sky blue glitter halter top, a blue Tommy Hilfiger jacket, black pants, black dress shoes with a medium heel, a dolphin-shaped ring, a heart-shaped ring, a silver neck chain, diamond earrings, a gold ring set with an emerald and two diamonds, and a gold ring set with a ruby and a garnet. She was carrying a Tommy Hilfiger purse. Danielle was 14 when she went missing. She would be 35 today. Anyone who has any information about Danielle Bell's disappearance is urged to call the Escambia County Sheriff's Office at 850-436-9620 or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678. And we want to give a big thank you to Bonnie Bell for talking to us for this episode. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com. Don't forget to like us on social media. We're on Facebook at And Then They Were Gone Pod. Be sure to check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and of course TikTok at ATTWGPod. Also, if you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode. And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at FreestyleLibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit MyFreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at FreestyleLibre.us.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, stain, tools, flooring, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online from May 8th through May 14th. Not a member? Join My Lowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.